Welcome to Relationships 2.0 with author and clinical psychologist, Michelle Skeen. Michelle and her guests will endeavor to guide you through the pathways for self-understanding that'll help you create and maintain safe and healthy relationships. You can find Michelle on the internet at michelleskeen.com. Now the host of Relationships 2.0, Michelle Skeen.
Welcome to Relationships 2.0. I'm Michelle Skeen. My special guest today, back for a return appearance, is, even though you can't see her, is Stephanie Sarkis. She is the author of several books, and I'll let her tell you which ones they are. But I'm having her back. Previously, I had her on to discuss gaslighting, which she has written about. And after chatting for a bit, I encouraged her to expand on the gaslighting to include this population that seems to be present with online dating sociopaths. So I'm having her back today to discuss sociopaths and to give us a little more insight into them. And so anyway, without further ado, here is Stephanie Sarkis. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, thanks for tolerating that bungled introduction. it's so funny. Of course, I just got back from this trip on Mount Rainier, where I was living on a glacier for 8 days. And how odd is it that my tent mate slash tent wife had a story about being in a relationship with a sociopath? I mean, it doesn't matter where you go, there's a story about someone being involved with a sociopath. And as we discussed before, now I believe that we're seeing more of it because of online dating. And so it made me want to chat with you again about it. And also, I was really moved by the fact that there, you know, once you've been involved with one, it's not only during the time incredibly painful and confusing, but in the aftermath can be very difficult. And I think that's an important aspect to address, is what it does to someone. You know, I had on an author who wrote about controlling partners. I want to say it was Carol Lambert, but that's another situation where I think people can really beat themselves up after on the heels of being in that kind of relationship.
I think so, too. I think it's also more common than we think. Like you said, again, with online dating, sociopaths are more likely to kind of fall through the cracks and not really be picked up on as sociopaths. And we can talk about a little bit about why that happens.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Well, part of it is that you can be anonymous online, so people can create their own personality. And part of the thing with sociopathy, and it goes by different names, like you may have heard antisocial personality disorder, narcissism. People have a issue with knowing right from wrong when they're sociopaths, but they don't really care. And also, they tend to create their own persona to look as normal as possible. So these are people that, on the face, you wouldn't really think that they have a pathology. In fact, you know, on your first day with them, they seem perfectly normal. And I think that's one of the insidious things about it, is that you don't always pick up on it. Even people that are clinicians and mental health issues have wound up dating sociopaths because, again, they can act like regular everyday people.
So the thing about online dating is you can, for a while, kind of be whoever you want to be until this persona starts to kind of unravel. But, you know, I was listening to a lecture recently about how, you know, back in the day, we all, you know, grew up in these kind of, like, people had tribes. And so you knew who people were. You knew who the odd people were. And now, because everyone's so transient and because we have the ability to connect with people in other countries, that it really makes it more difficult to figure out who is the bad one.
Right. And I think in the U.S., we tend to have an individualistic society, which means that we tend not to look to family to okay our choice of mates.
Mm-hmm.
And in collectivist culture, which you see in some Mediterranean families, Asian families, that you get a pretty good idea from your family what their view is of the person, whether they're appropriate for you or not. And I think that, you know, yay for individualism, but also on the flip side of that, you aren't having your family kind of check who you're going out with. And being honest with you sometimes and saying, hey, this person doesn't seem like they're very healthy. And there's also a sense of rebellion of, oh, this person, my family doesn't like them. Well, okay, I'll just, you know, go out with them anyway. And also the appeal actually grows. And again, when you have collectivistic family, you look at what's for the betterment of the group. And I think we've kind of moved away from that, especially again, in the U.S. we're more individualistic culture. So I think that lends itself to it, that people aren't really saying as much to people, hey, this person's not appropriate for you, or hey, I'm seeing some stuff that looks like it may lend to abusive behavior. People are kind of backing off and kind of keeping to themselves about that. And also the people that are dating the sociopaths don't always want to hear it either. And that's the other reality of it, is that you don't like being told that you may not have picked the best mate. And there's an automatic defensiveness that happens with that.
Well, aren't there also certain types that are going to be drawn to it? And one thing I've noticed is that the kind of women who are attracted to male sociopaths and the kind of men who are attracted to female sociopaths, and they do exist, are very nice, accommodating people.
Right, almost overly so. Yeah, that term codependent, where you're putting your needs behind those of your partner, that you'll do whatever you need to make your partner happy, even if that means hurting yourself. And that tends to be something that, you know, that women sometimes get praised for in society, that, oh, you're empathic and you're a helper person. But the flip side of that, again, is that you put your own needs aside. And when you're with a sociopath, they start telling you kind of to not even trust your own intuition that something's wrong. So you keep going along with the relationship, even though you know that something just is off, and then your self-esteem starts eroding.
So you, and why is it, when we go through in the aftermath of these relationships, and the women I've spoken to who have been in them, there's always this, I remember when he said this, I should have, and I thought that was weird. I remember when this happened, and I was concerned about that, but I overlooked it. What do you make of that? Why do we tend to do that?
I think that when you're in a relationship, we have this idea of, there's this thing called the sunken cost fallacy, which means if we put time and effort into a relationship, the longer we're in it, the less likely we are to kind of pack up and go, even if we see signals that tell us it's not the right relationship for us. Because again, you've spent emotion, time getting to know this person, and you really want to stick it out. You don't want to admit that maybe something wasn't the right choice for you. And I think that's very difficult for a lot of people to admit. Mm-hmm. But also with a sociopath, this isn't something that happens overnight. It's very gradual. It may start with making a little comment here and there about, oh, you've gained some weight, to then all of a sudden by the end of the relationship, full-blown comparing you to other people, constant cheating. So it's a thing that gradually happens. And for some people, it's hard to even notice that it's happening because it's that subtle.
And at this point, the person has gotten so invested in the relationship that they're taking that criticism about themselves.
Right, because you know, you value the other person's opinion. And so when someone tells you, you know, that you're no good or that you're inadequate, you know, people start buying it. And again, the more you're told that, the more you start believing it. And like you mentioned, sometimes people that get in those relationships they tend to be sensitive people, and I mean that in a positive way. They tend to look out for other people's feelings. And so it really doesn't make any sense to a person that's sensitive why someone would act like that. So there's this kind of idea of disbelief that, oh, there's no way they could have thought that because people just don't do that. And that's another trap that people get into too, is that the person just says something so outrageous that you immediately say, well, I must not have heard that correctly because that was really cruel. And you know, people don't do that. So you know, it's this real distrust of yourself and your intuition. I think that gets a lot of people stuck in these type of relationships.
You know, one of the things that we've talked about before and that you highlight in this piece that I'm looking at that you put together, are these types of people who identify particular core beliefs that play into the sociopath.
Right. And there's different issues with core beliefs. I know you've talked about that on your show before, but mistrust.
Yeah. I've written about it in Love Me, Don't Leave Me and The Critical Partner. Mm-hmm. Every other book I've written, but yeah.
Right.
So yeah, just
so
a
I
little
don't
bit.
Need to read them to you, I'm just, but,
no, but I want you to go through them for our audience. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. There's mistrust and abuse, abandonment, emotional deprivation, defectiveness, and failure. And I'll go in a little bit more about that. But the idea is that there's four different types of sociopaths that you might run into when you're dating. One is the abandoner. And that really touches on your core feelings of abandonment, that you're concerned that someone's going to leave you. You're concerned that that maybe you were abandoned by a parent during your formative years. So you tend to be drawn to people that almost kind of replay that psychic trauma for you. There's also an abuser, and that touches on your core beliefs of mistrust and abuse. Because, again, if you were abused as a child, you form a distrust of people, and rightfully so, because the people that were supposed to take care of you hurt you. So again, you may be drawn towards people like that. There's also a depriver. If you were in a relationship or family unit that had a lot of emotional deprivation, you didn't have a lot of support in your life. Your feelings weren't validated. You didn't talk about issues at home. People just stayed really quiet and didn't bring things to the surface. Then you tend to be drawn towards people that withhold emotion. There's also the devastator, and that gets into defectiveness. Quite a few people have a core belief of defectiveness, which is, you know, I'm not good enough. There's something inherently defective with me, and I am not like anyone else, and not in a positive way, but in a way that, you know, I'm never going to achieve what other people achieve. I'm never going to have a happy life. You know, there's something fundamentally wrong with me. And again, you tend to get hooked into relationships with people that really kind of prey on that idea of defectiveness, and they use it to their advantage. Also, there's the critic. This is a person that you're probably drawn to if you have a core belief of failure, that, again, you're never good enough. You just don't match up to what society says you should be. You were told as a child that you were a failure. You never lived up to your potential, quote unquote. So again, you are drawn towards people that kind of affirm that idea that you're a failure, you know, by being a critic. So those are the different types of sociopaths. And you can have a sociopath that displays behavior of any of those types as well. And that's the other thing about sociopaths, is that they can be an abandoner and a devastator. They can be a critic and an abuser.
Right.
There's all different variations. And you can have people that are all of these. And they have this kind of bag of tricks that they use these ideas of, they kind of almost know what your core beliefs are. And they tap into those and they exploit them. So if they know that you have an issue with feeling defective, well, that's the first thing they're going to mention to you, is that, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you so screwed up? And again, that plays into the exact fear that you have.
So do they tend to start off more like complimentary to get the person engaged, and then they start using what you call the bag of tricks and start kind of devaluing and controlling and gaslighting and all of that kind of stuff?
Right. These are people that in the beginning of relationships, it's called love bombing. These are people that say you're the best thing ever happened to me, and they're ready to have a commitment within one or two dates. Mm-hmm. They're talking about marriage within a couple weeks. They're telling you the best thing that ever walked the face of the earth, putting you on a pedestal, lavishing you with gifts, possibly nice dinners. They seem to be too good to be true. And then, you know, that stays on for a while until you fall off the pedestal, and you will eventually fall off. And that's one of the issues, is that you are never going to be that kind of idolized person forever. And it's a long way down off the pedestal when the sociopath knocks you off of it. So, and that's where you get into, like, for instance, an abandoner. They'll tend to have unpredictable behavior. They'll just all of a sudden no-show for things. You won't hear from them for a while, and all of a sudden they pop back into your life, and they're like, well, what's wrong? And you say, well, yeah, I didn't talk to you for 2 weeks. Well, you know, no, you're being really clingy, and I backed off. When, in fact, you know, over those 2 weeks, they may have been seeing someone else. So you start seeing that facade crack over time.
It's interesting because I think there's a way in which a lot of people would, when they were treated like that, even if they had some of these core beliefs, might be a little, well, like, that's unacceptable. But then there has to be some other kind of thing that's going on. There's like this swapping, like, the criticism for the seduction, right? Because there's a way in which it's like a fish hook. And this is what I hear from everyone I've talked to about this, is that at some point they know that this person isn't a good person, but they still have difficulty getting out.
Right, because there's this thing called hoovering, and like the vacuum cleaner, which is if you try to leave, they'll try whatever's in their power to get you back. Because when you have issues like antisocial personalities or sociopathy, narcissism, you have a real core fear of being abandoned, even more so than with the core beliefs. This is something where you cannot have someone leave you because you feel like you are completely inadequate as a person. You may not realize this at the surface. But people that leave, people are sociopathy oriented. They tend to be hounded by the person, maybe even stalked. And then all of a sudden, inexplicably, they'll remove the stalking behavior. And then the person wonders, well, what happened? They were trying to contact me all the time and now nothing. And that actually reels the person in even closer. Sometimes the relationships, the sociopathy oriented person will just leave and all of a sudden take up with a new relationship. And then the other person's left going, wait a second, how do we go from I'm the best thing ever to all of a sudden you're completely gone? So there's that hoovering aspect and then the complete abandonment aspect of sociopaths.
One of the other things that people have told me about their relationship with sociopath is that they really notice this profound reaction to when the sociopath is getting criticized. Do you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, when the sociopath's being criticized by the person in the relationship?
Yes.
Yeah, that does not fly with sociopaths. Anytime that you point out anything that they've done inappropriately, it automatically gets turned back on you. That, you know, how dare you, after you've done XYZ, dare to criticize me. People that are sociopaths may react with rage, or they may just completely stonewall you, meaning that they will just completely cut you off because you kind of aren't allowed to make criticisms about them because they don't have any issues to them. So how dare you violate that idea that they are perfect by you criticizing them. So, yeah, and
but usually, underlying all of this is that they have incredibly thin skin.
Yes, even though it looks completely opposite. And some of the tip-offs to that are, You'll have somebody talk about work and say, well, you know, all these people at work are jerks and they're out to get me, and that's why I didn't get this promotion. When in fact, the person may actually be a jerk in the workplace. So, right. I mean, that's something to pay attention to. When everybody's out to get someone, that's a tip off that they may have done something that had warranted people trying to stay away from them.
Mm-hmm. Other things to pay attention to, what about their friend network?
Their friend network tends to, they'll tell you that they have a big network, but then they really don't. They have a lot, or they have a lot of superficial relationships, but no real emotional intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really have people that they would call at 3 a.m. if they were in crisis. They just don't have that. So so they may rely on you as their partner to fill that void, and no one can ever fill that void because it's a bottomless pit of need. So what happens is the person that's dating the sociopath will constantly be giving and giving and giving, trying to rectify the person's issue when it can never be rectified. And then the person dating the sociopath blames themselves for the sociopath kind of not getting quote unquote better. So that gets to be a big problem, that emotional kind of vampire behavior of the person that's dating a sociopath.
Yeah, one of the things that was never highlighted in any of these, you know, quick articles about, I mentioned this last time about how do you know you're dating a sociopath, mm-hmm. was, first of all of the articles mentioned, they lack empathy, when in fact, mm-hmm. sociopaths can have cognitive empathy, and most likely they do. That's how they're able to read people and kind of get people sucked into their orbit. But another thing that, wasn't mentioned in these articles that I think is really important to highlight is the fact that they are really good at using this pity play. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of the victim, and it's kind of a little bit of a poor me. And for people who have caregiving tendencies, whether you're a man or a woman, you can easily be drawn to that and be made to feel like at times like maybe you're not being caring or understanding enough, which then makes you feel awful because you are a caring and understanding person.
Right.
And that's the last thing that you want to be, you know, identified with. So
right.
Those are really important pieces. And actually I didn't read about those until I was reading parts of a book and an article by the, I think the kind of international expert, I believe she's at Harvard, Helen Stout, is it?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Anyway, so would you like to say more about that?
Sure. I think that when you look at sociopaths, it is the polar opposite of people that are empathic and caregivers. You as caregivers, if you're in a helping profession like nurse or mental health clinician or other type of clinician, you look out for your client or patient's needs, and you're highly attentive to what people need. And so when you meet up with a sociopath, it's the flip side of the coin. You have someone that, you know, may have a cognitive empathy, which isn't really empathy because it's acting like you're empathic. And the person that's not a sociopath may say, oh, well, this person is asking me about how my day is, or they're asking me how I'm doing, but they're not really hearing the answer. They're saying it because they think that's what they should say to be a quote unquote normal person. So,
right.
And to reel you in. So that's the cognitive empathy part, is that they're playing a role. And again, the person that's the empathic person, sensitive person, it's such a sense of disbelief that anyone could ever fake like they're a human.
Right.
It just goes against everything that they've been trained in, that, you know, people can change and people are basically good.
Right.
So it really throws people for a loop.
Yeah, it really does. I was thinking about this individual who, you can tell with certain people that they just think they're supposed to say certain things and then that they shut down, that they're not listening.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cognitive empathy would be, how's your day? And then when you're answering the question, the sociopath either changes the subject really quickly or you can tell that they are not there. They've already checked out. They don't really care about the answer. They just want to look like it. Or you go to therapy with them. Now, first thing they'll tell you is that the therapist doesn't know what they're doing. Or, you know, they aren't a specialist and they are ridiculous. And then they'll learn from the therapist, oh, well, you need to ask the person at least how their day is. So they'll do it kind of a mocking way, like, oh, well, the therapist wanted me to do this. So, you know, if this makes you happy. And that's that guilt part. So, you know, we're in therapy because of you. So I'm going to ask you how your day was so you can feel better. It's a very put upon kind of, like you said, a victim role of, you know, I don't want to ask you how your day is, but I'm going to do it to make you happy. And that's what the therapist said.
Yeah. So talk about, so we've talked a little bit about kind of warning signs, but there has to be a little bit more that we can offer the listeners to help them identify this type of person early on. And I would think that there are even patterns in their, maybe in their dating profiles, there are even things that you might be able to identify. Now, here's the problem with all of this. I just want to say that once you start focusing on, I mean, there are behaviors that sociopaths have that we all have to some smaller extent, you know?
Right.
And so it's really easy to start believing that everyone's a sociopath if you focus too much on all of these negative traits. So just, you know, a little bit of warning there that, you know, we don't want to dismiss people too quickly, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we're eliminating people that are potentially really, really harmful.
Right. And sociopaths look really good on paper too. They will write profiles that are exactly what everybody wants to hear. They may seem even unrealistic. Their pictures may seem unrealistic. And sometimes it may even look like they maybe photoshopped themselves in different scenarios. So it's something where, again, too good to be true. And another way to protect yourself from this is to also look at what your core beliefs are. Do you have issues with abandonment? Do you have issues with emotional withholding? Are there things that you need to take care of in yourself so you can find the right person? I think that's really essential, whether that's, you know, getting your books or workbook or going to a therapist, doing your own self-reflection about that, is that the more you take care of those core beliefs and get those resolved, the less you may fall prey to someone like this. So that's the first step, is kind of look at yourself and see if there's areas, and we could all use areas of improvement. Everyone could.
Absolutely.
But like, it's really what important are your, to pay attention to that.
Like, what is your Achilles heel? You know, what would someone be able to focus on, and what's your vulnerability to someone like this?
Oh, personally?
I mean, you can totally answer it personally, but I just meant for people to bring awareness to that, right? What is about you that would make you pray to someone like this if you weren't paying attention?
Well, I'll just give the example of clinicians like you and I. So someone questioning our credibility, or, you know, did we really work so hard for our degrees, or, you know, that kind of thing. That, especially for professional women, that's a real zinger for a lot of us. Is somebody telling us that, that, you know, they don't believe that our degrees are real, or that we actually have training, or someone knows how to do their job better than we do, even though they don't have the training. So that for a lot of professional women really is kind of a pet peeve. I don't know if it's particularly for me.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that. Say more about that. I
don't, sure. So I don't, if you're not helping,
I'd just be like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that would kind of be my reaction.
I don't know
too,
that I would
like,
care. But,
yeah, I'd be like, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
You know, so.
But that's
you on the
interesting.
Way out.
So you've heard this from women in our profession who have had. So how does that impact them? Like, how does that get them engaged with the sociopath or the narcissist or whatever type of, or the
what it does, I think for a lot of professional women, it brings up feelings of sometimes in a male dominated workplace that you have to work five times harder than everyone else to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had to fight for that for so long. And then you get into an argument with your partner and they start talking about how, you know, you're less than because you're female, or, you know, I bet you just got that job because you slept with people at the office. And it really gets those ideas or those really strong feelings about, you know what, that I've been discriminated against because I was a woman. And it really plays into that, and it really gets people's hackles up, and for good reason. But it's important to know the sociopath's doing that on purpose. They're doing it to get you riled up. That's the way that they know that you're still hooked in. One of the things you can do to really
it's a sign that you actually care what they think.
Right. It's reinforcing. It's positive reinforcement of their behavior. Because one of the things you can do for sociopaths that makes them run the other way really quickly is you just act kind of confused and bored with things. You say, oh, I don't really know how I feel about that anymore. And, you know, you may be right. Because what they're looking for is a fight. And when you don't give them a fight, they kind of give up. And again, if you don't get it, you just say, I'm confused about things. I don't know. I don't know if I really care anymore. And a sociopath kind of backs off sometimes. Now, not all the time. Sometimes they can be sociopaths to the point where they start threatening violence. So you got to be careful with that. But and I would recommend always having a phone number on speed dial, somebody you can call to come get you, or the phone number for an abuse shelter if things have gotten to the point where you are concerned for your safety. But again, yeah, if you say, you know, I'm kind of bored and I don't know, I don't really have anything exciting about my life, you know,
Freudian slip.
Yeah, I know, really. And some sociopaths, again, they need drama. They need something to work with. And if you're not giving them anything, the relationship might end pretty quickly.
So that is one of the things that's really fascinating. I read this piece that they don't fear death. They fear boredom and that they thrive on drama so much. They love to create drama. It's funny what you're saying about that professional thing, because I had this flash. Like, I definitely think that I've met people like that, like guys like that, in a really casual setting, not where I ever went out with them, but just like maybe, you know, in a social setting or a bar or something like that, and that we're trying to get some, you know, drama going. And it was just kind of like, oh, I mean, that's just the kind of thing I walk away from. But yeah, that's fascinating. But it might be a hook for other people, depending upon what their core belief is and how they react when their core belief is triggered.
Right. And also when you look at, too, that sociopaths give you a bunch of attention at the beginning of the relationship. And that's very seductive for a lot of people, especially if you have issues of feeling inferior or feeling emotionally detached. That's your core belief. Here you've got someone that's telling you their deepest feelings, but they're not really real feelings. And they're very surface. Again, it's cognitive empathy. It's not the empathy that most people have. And that's something to be aware of. Again, it's feeding right into that need you have to resolve that core belief.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so some of it might be the person might be challenging, the sociopath might be challenging you initially, you know, kind of getting you on guard or getting you engaged in kind of this, I don't know, this this drama or something. I don't know how to identify it.
For your weak spots.
Okay.
Looking for your psychologically vulnerable spots without even realizing they're doing it. It's almost like they're doing a constant scan of what your insecurities are. So if you come home from work one day and you say, "Oh, I'm mad at so and so because they took credit for this project I was doing." And then all of a sudden you notice that when the sociopath gets in a fight, they start taking credit for all the things you've done in the relationship. And they've picked up on this stuff so you're more prey to them.
Okay.
It's almost like when you show vulnerability, instead of that connecting you emotionally, they file those away for later.
Okay. And one of the things I want you to talk about In terms of a manipulation on the part of the sociopath. In we discussed this before, but I, for people who didn't hear that show and just need a refresher, is to talk about gaslighting and how really controlling and devastating that is for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gaslighting, and what we talked about before was that gaslighting is a method of behavior that's used by people that are abusive. It's used by dictators. It's used by people that want to gain control over others. And it's psychological manipulation to the point where it's so subtle over time that a lot of people don't realize that they're even victims of it, even after their friends and family have pointed it out to them. Gaslighting would be something like you have someone tell you a really outrageous lie because then you won't notice the subtle lies as much. They turn things against you. Like if you say that, well, you're always, you know, showing up late from work, and they'll blame it on you and say, well, you know, if you were a nicer person to come home to, I wouldn't do it. Right. And, oh, and then this becomes, and then also the projection of, you know, oh, I know you're cheating. You're told that all the time by your party, even though you're not cheating. And it turns out they are. Sociopaths, narcissists, constant, usually cheaters. I'm always looking for their next fix of you know, that psychological filling of that ego void. Again, over time, it's something also where you have people turn your family and friends against you, because what they want is they want to isolate you. Because if you're isolated from your family and friends, then who else are you going to go to if you have issues, or who else are you going to go to for emotional support except a sociopath?
Right.
So also splitting, saying that, you know, your friend said this about you, because then you no longer want to talk to that friend. And again, you're being isolated. So it's either saying, you know, I don't like your family because of, and they come up with kind of some vague reason, nothing real substantive. Or they say, well, you know, you're, sister said this to me about you, and I'm just trying to defend you, when in fact your sister never even said the thing. So there are all sorts of different manipulation techniques. It's almost like it gives the sociopath kind of a high from being able to pull these things off, so they get a payoff from it.
Wow. It's you know, it's so crazy to hear, and yet the people who I've spoken to who have had this experience with sociopaths, these are smart people. These are successful people. These are not people who you would think, oh, well, this is an obvious victim. I mean, this is someone who would be an obvious victim of a sociopath. You know, these are the woman I spoke to about it most recently, I mean, a successful career woman, really, you know, strong in body and mind and spirit. And it's just, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you again about this, because I feel the need to warn people who, because I think that those are the people who are unsuspecting. Who would ever think that, right?
Right. And,
you know, you've kind of got your shiz together. It doesn't seem likely that something like that would happen.
Right. To people that know themselves pretty well too.
Right.
This isn't just people that have a bunch of issues with core beliefs and, you know, have a lot of abandonment stuff. It's people that are generally pretty healthy. And again, that's the sociopath is very good at pretending to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, you know, when they first start dating a sociopath, they feel like they've met their match as far as professionally and education-wise and insightfulness and conversation. And then you've got the whole other piece of the sociopath. And it's almost like a challenge to a sociopath that the more on your game that you are, it's more of a challenge to them to see if they can knock you down from that.
Oh, it may, they really get some excitement out of that then.
Yeah, it's a game. Yeah.
And
it's almost like a feather in their cap.
And
I think
that for normal people, it's just so difficult to imagine that someone would find it entertaining to harm someone else emotionally and psychologically.
Right, which is healthy people shouldn't be able to see what that's like.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's very hard to understand why someone would be like that, whether it's someone that was just born, their wiring was different, or they had something happen in their past. I mean, it really doesn't matter. The point is that it's eroding your self-esteem and it's eroding your quality of life, regardless of how that person turned into that. And again, these are people that tend not to like to go to therapy, or they say they're going to therapy just to make you happy. And again, they'll tell you that the therapist
right.
doesn't know what they're talking about.
Therapist, right? Mm-hmm. Then they lie to their therapist.
Right, they lie to the therapist, or they'll pit the therapist against you. They'll try to do that. And again, people that are sociopaths have even fooled very seasoned therapists. They're that good at manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, and that's another thing, is that I spoke to you about this, but I also mm-hmm. spoke to a female therapist about it, and she was saying that it was very that she's been sucked in before as a therapist,
mm-hmm.
and because they can be very charming, right?
Right, it's an uncanny ability to act human. Yeah, and some of the tip-offs are that there seems to be a level of neediness, that there's also a high ego, but there's a level of terrible neediness to it.
Okay.
And there's also a sense, it's almost like they're a caricature of themselves. It's almost like they're very cartoonish in their behavior. It seems not quite real. Mm-hmm. And the more you work with people that have issues with sociopathy, the more you're able to kind of see it. But it is very difficult for a lot of people to know. So, you know, if clinicians can't even pick it out, it can be very difficult for lay people to pick it out. Right. And that's, again, where it's really important to know yourself. Listen to your friends and family. If they tell you that they don't think that person's a good person for you, and otherwise you've been in a pretty good relationship with your friends and family, listen to that. So listen to someone that says, you know, I don't like the way that they're treating you. I think something's wrong.
Right.
Listen to them when they say, hey, I saw them out, you know, at the store with some girl or some guy or something. Listen to that. You know, they're not trying to make you mad. They're trying to kind of tell you what's up so you're able to, you know, have a rational view of it. But the issue with love, too, is that it kind of gives you temporary insanity.
Right.
So, you know, I think the example I give is like, oh, well, you're an axe murderer. I can totally work with that. You know, I mean, and
yeah, I'll just take your axe away and
right. Yeah. Everything will be fine.
You're probably like this because this happened when you were a child.
Right.
And what might be some of those? So, I mean, typically when you're getting to know someone, well, I guess they would lie about their childhood. But one of the things I noticed with sociopaths is they don't have they have either odd details or no details, you know, and they
yes,
have, and
right.
over time they have kind of a pat story. Well, I was raised by, you know, my parents, came over from England and because they wanted to give me a better life and they worked hard and they raised me and I went to school and they were great.
Right. It's very
like who
generic.
Has a childhood like that? Yeah.
Right. It's very generic. And when you ask about details, oh, I don't remember that. Now, there are legitimately sometimes people that can't remember their childhood for various
sure.
reasons. But this is something where sometimes the facts change that, oh, no, my mother didn't die. No, she just lives in another country. I don't know where you got the idea. Well, it's because they told you their mother died. I mean, things change over time. And then you're told that you just aren't remembering it correctly. So you start questioning your sanity. So stories about just a lot of persecution. And again, you know, people have been abused in their childhoods, but this goes beyond. There's a different flavor to it, I think, when sociopaths are. It's an unrealistic view of being a victim, meaning that, you know, this person said, their teacher said to them, I don't like your handwriting, or you need to work your handwriting. And that person's been a vendetta against that teacher since they've been in second grade. I mean,
oh,
that's,
it's still talking about the second grade teacher.
Still talking about the second
okay,
grade teacher and about how they were out to get them and, you know, they hope they burn in hell. And, you know, I mean, it just goes way over. The lid kind of comes off the sociopath and you see all of a sudden all this fury come out. And it's pretty startling to see if you've been dating someone that acts pretty low key overall, that all of a sudden they have this explosion of rage against someone that, you know, from when they were a kid. Again, you know, if you have an abuse history, that's a pretty normal reaction, but this is someone that has not gone through abuse and has this reaction of complete rage towards people.
Interesting. And it seems over minor things.
Over minor things too. Yeah. And the other thing I want to bring up that I just wrote an article in Psychology Today about is that how sociopaths and narcissists treat your pets. That's another tip off too.
Oh my gosh. Say more about this, because I just heard this story about this.
So sociopaths and narcissists will treat their animals sometimes better than they treat people, or they'll say that you know, people are, they deserve to be treated poorly, but animals don't because they're innocent. Or the flip side of that is they'll neglect their pets, or if you have them watch your pets, they will neglect them. If you have rules like don't give my dog chocolate, they will sneak chocolate to your dog, kind of undermine you. Or they'll make your dog out to be a bad dog that, oh, well, they snapped at me. Well, it turns out that the sociopath was teasing your dog, mm-hmm. and your dog finally said, enough, I don't want this anymore. And in some extreme cases, sometimes narcissists and sociopaths even had a child's pet put down when the child was away at college or something like that for no reason. So, or they made up a reason when they went to the vet. So these are people that have a real need to watch people suffer and have animals suffer in a lot of cases. So I tell people, you know, if you feel like you're not ready to get out of the relationship, look at what this person's doing to your pets. Look at what they're doing to your kids. Look what they're doing to your family.
Right.
If not for you, you know, for them.
So
consider getting out.
The story I heard was just awful. So they lived in a home where he had cameras everywhere. He had everything on. He was videotaping everything. And she obviously was suspicious and was looking at the tape while she was gone, and he was taking her little dog and throwing it high up in the air. And as soon as he would catch it, he'd throw it back up again. This dog
right.
obviously was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And when confronted, that's the other thing that's interesting. So when they're confronted with stuff, if there's no evidence, and even in the face of evidence, their denial
right.
runs deep. It's
it's
crazy. Like, here is a snapshot of this. Here's a screenshot
right.
of this. You did this. And it's like, no, I didn't.
No. Nope.
What do you mean you didn't? It's right here.
Right. No, I didn't do it. No, somebody just altered that because they want you to be mad at me. No, that never happened. Yeah, that's very common. It's, you know, the hand in the cookie jar, and someone's still lying to you about their hand in the cookie jar. And when you get to the point in a relationship with a sociopath.
And is that the gaslighting thing?
That can be part of gaslighting, yeah, is that the totally denying reality to
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, like, you saw them kissing somebody at some restaurant somewhere, and you tell them, I saw this. They're like, no. You know, you just want to see stuff and you're just crazy, or, you know, you were just drinking too much, or, you know, it's always put back on you why it's not real. Or you have eyewitnesses to something. No, that person just doesn't like me and they're trying to turn you against me. Or you have video of something. No, that's not really me. Are you sure that's me? I don't think that's me. And they may even tell you this with a playful smile on their face. And again, you know, they try to get you to kind of fall for these intricate sets of lies that really make you question, like I said, question your sanity.
Yeah, because that kind of thing is, I mean, I think we've all had that situation before, even, you know, with friends or loved ones where you're saying, mm-hmm. look, this happened. And they're like, no, it didn't. And you're like, well, for any of us who have raised kids, yes.
Right.
It did.
No, right.
I didn't
hand
do
the cookie
that.
Jar.
I know
right.
you did it.
Right. Right. But that, this is a continued pattern of doing this.
Right.
This is their MO throughout their entire lives has been hand in the cookie jar, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, with kids it's pretty normal to do that.
Right.
You know, but eventually you kind of outgrow it. But again, this is their main fallback as to explaining their behavior. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, you know, very rarely do you hear sociopaths or narcissists say they're sorry. You can ask them to say that to apologize to you, and they might do it if they think that you might leave. But other than that, you know, they don't feel like they're in the wrong.
Yeah, they can never admit that they're wrong. Or do they sometimes flip it and become, like, use that as a manipulation to say that they're wrong or that they're sorry to get someone back? Or
that's the hoovering part, where if you try to leave, that they kind of fall over themselves trying to get you to come back, and they'll say whatever. But as soon as you, it's almost like a switch. As soon as you get back in the relationship, the old persona's back. It's like night and day. You can actually see people shift from that pretty composed thing to falling apart to compose in about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I've seen in session, it's very chilling to see how quickly people can change your personality.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think is important to highlight is, you mentioned this earlier. You said, look, these people look good, can look really good on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know there are some books out there that are, The Sociopath in a Suit is one of the books,
mm-hmm.
but there are certain professions that actually really suit the sociopath. So finance is one of them. I also read that it's not unusual to see these people as psychologists,
mm-hmm.
and things like ministers or church, you know, some kind of leader, because they can tend to be very charismatic.
I think the main thing is that they are attracted to having power.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody likes to have some power, control over stuff in their life, but these are people that have a pathological craving for power. And if you think about the therapeutic relationship, the therapist does have more quote-unquote power in the relationship, because you're telling a therapist all of your stuff, but they're not telling you their stuff. So you automatically have a hierarchy there. So,
right.
So again, you know, even relationships that you think are pretty equal, they're not necessarily equal. And I think it's more that they're drawn to positions of power, positions of autonomy, rather than very specific professions. But there are professions where you do have more power than others, and then they are maybe drawn to those. And a lot of sociopaths are very bright, so they tend to go into, you know, professional fields. And some sociopaths, you know, are just regular average people too. So that's not to say that everybody that banking or everybody that's, you know, a surgeon or a therapist.
Right.
But I think that's one thing to look at, is that, again, you know, when the person's in their field and they see something that's unethical, what do they do? Do they say something? Do they say, oh, well, good for them that they got away with it? Because that would be a sociopath answer. Almost, pride in the fact that they were able to pull a fast one on somebody.
They would like that.
They would like that. They would idolize that person almost. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, wow, what a disgusting behavior that was. It's more like, oh, well, haha, you know, they got away with it. Good for them, mm-hmm. is the reaction.
They might be fascinated by someone who was behaving badly and getting away with it, or profiting
right.
off of other people's misery or something.
Right. Even
like that.
Maybe use that as a rule book and try to emulate some of those behaviors themselves.
Mm-hmm. So again, we're talking about a population that were, for people who are dating online, we're seeing more of these types of people, because it's a way for them to access their victims.
Mm-hmm. And also it makes it easier to cheat too when you're online,
mm-hmm.
because you figure if your partner's in a committed relationship, they're not online, but you are still. So that's a way that they can get around that. And you see this also, narcissists and sociopaths like to live in big cities so they can be more anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may not run into people as much anymore. So if a narcissist is with their new partner, they aren't going to see their ex-partner.
Right.
It's less likely, and to be called out on a behavior, or have that person say, hey, I really need to warn you about this guy or girl. And you know, again, online, you've already kind of found a way into the front door of somebody's house because you've posted pictures of yourself. You've made yourself look very charming, and we all want to look good, right? But this is again, kind of false humility. It's braggadocio. It's ego, and again, too good to be true. Yeah. And I think I keep that in mind. If there's someone that doesn't seem like they have any faults, that's an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, might they throw in something that's like a little fault as kind of like a way to hook you?
Right. Like, oh, well, you know, sometimes I cry during movies. I can be too sensitive when I watch movies and you know, things like that.
Oh, my God. That reminds me that I was just running across these papers when we were doing, and this is years ago because my sons are 25 now, but when they were doing applications for, I think it might have even been for a high school transfer or something like that. And we're like, oh, what's your weakness? And we were joking that it was, oh, because you care too much, you know, that kind of thing. Right. Right. Yeah.
Right. Like, right. Right.
Oh, sometimes I can be too sensitive and cry at movies, you know?
Right. Right.
That's just like, oh right. My God, you do. I love you.
Right. Right.
And
you're saying,
the thing wrong with him is that he cries at movies sometimes.
Right. Right. Smart
Isn't
kid.
He amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, there you go. So that you can do things that are like a sociopath, but not be a sociopath.
Yeah.
Again, it's a series of behaviors. So,
yeah.
And sometimes you aren't going to know this again until, you know, you go on the second through date with someone. And it's important to forgive yourself too, if you get into a relationship with someone like this.
Self-compassion is huge in this case because this This is, I mean, look, trained people have been fooled by these people. So this is not anything to blame yourself for. But it's why I think it's so important to be warning people about this. And I'm so looking forward to you getting this book underway that will really help people. Stephanie, we've run out of time. I want you to tell everyone how to find you. And so, yeah, give a big shout out for your website and all of that.
Sure, sure. It's StephanieSarkis.com, StephanieSarkis.com. And there's information on gaslighting, sociopathy, and all sorts of other tools for people to look up.
Yeah, and Stephanie is also an expert in ADHD. And in the previous podcast, show that we recorded, she talked about how those people are drawn to sociopaths too, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, for the excitement. Some people want that excitement, drama,
and validation,
peace, and all of that kind of stuff. Well, it's always such a treat chatting with you, and I'm so glad that you took the time to do this. I just felt really strongly coming back from this trip. I was like, I can't believe this. Here I was with another really smart, together woman who ended up getting sucked in to a really bad, harmful relationship. And I'd also love to have you back at some point to discuss, because I think there is a woman sociopath who has a blog where she writes about what she does. She's kind of like outed herself. I think it might be anonymous.
Do
you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I think it would be really interesting to kind of focus on the woman sociopath because
I think a lot
of guys get really duped, and it's easy to focus on the men. Maybe we're doing that because we're women, or we think of men as being kind of more controlling and traditional gender roles, but
and women can be just as sociopathic.
Yeah,
issues with men are that, you know, they tell their friends, hey, this woman's doing this, and they're not always believed because it's thought that sociopaths are usually men. And again, you know, there can be equal number of women that do it.
Well, I think that's also been the problem with domestic violence towards men that men just aren't believed that women would hit them. So I think it would be time to kind of open that and expose that. So thank you.
I mean, you're welcome. I was just gonna say that there are women that are 5 feet tall that have injured a 6'4" man very severely and taller. Yeah. So that's the other thing too, is that just because you're little doesn't mean you can't be a perpetrator of abuse.
Yeah, so. It's all very real. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to chatting with you again. And in the meantime, everyone, be well.